Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show planned for all of you today. My guest will be Jody Lindsay Popma. She is the founder of Smart Food Made Simple, and I will tell you more about her in just a little bit. But first, I want to go over some things going on in the news, share my recipe with you, of course, and some ways that you can all take some action. So first off, we've been seeing some horrendous weather. First, we had Hurricane Harvey in Texas, an earthquake in Mexico. We're still dealing with the ramifications of the Hurricane Irma down in Florida. And we're all anxiously watching Hurricane Jose spin around out there in the Atlantic Ocean, seeing where it's going to decide to go. So this is just getting to be the new normal, all these intense weather conditions. Oh, we can't forget the droughts and the forest fires that are going on out west. So, it's really ridiculous that people in our government are denying that climate change is here. And it really is here. And there's a new piece of legislation that was introduced that I'd really like all of you to sign on board with. It is called the Off Fossil Fuels for a Better Future Act. And it was introduced back in April by Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard. And other Democrats have been coming on board, but we really need to push it. This piece of legislation is demanding a transition to 100% clean, renewable energy by 2035. And Food and Water Watch is asking people to sign on board to support this piece of legislation. So if you could go to Food and Water Watch's website, or I have links from my website, that would be great. But we really need to, take a look at this. All the different grassroots organizations that are fighting for the environment and good food and food justice and Black Lives Matter and all these other very worthwhile issues won't mean anything if we don't have a planet to protect. So we really need to step up to the plate and do that. So please sign on to that. I'm also, I was reading about regenerative agriculture, and we've heard a lot about organic agriculture and biodynamic, but we're really trying to raise awareness about regenerative agriculture. And as Vedana Shiva says, this regenerative agriculture provides answers to the soil crisis, the food crisis, the health crisis, the climate crisis, and the crisis of democracy. And we really need to build a coalition of all of our grassroots organizations and push this agenda through Washington to transition away from this industrial agricultural system. And it is complicated. I was at an incredible event yesterday, the Food Tank Summit in New York, and the theme was food waste. But I was listening to Dan Barber and Sam Kass speak, and Dan was sharing his experience of going out to Iowa and seeing a 22,000-acre field of wheat. And how this wheat, there's one combine that harvests all that wheat, and how they spray that wheat 2 weeks before harvest with fertilizer to increase the gluten in the wheat. And, with all the gluten allergies that we're having, it makes sense that people connect the dots. It's not wheat that's the problem. It's the pesticides and the herbicides. I also have spoken in the past about the event I was in Italy at the Slow Food Terra Madre conference, and we were talking about the true cost of food, and they were talking about how wheat was only grown in Sicily, south of Rome, but predominantly in Sicily because that had the climate for it. And now the largest producer of wheat is Canada, and I guess maybe Iowa is up there now too. But Canada, which is so far north, how can they produce wheat? And they, the people in Italy were really trying to figure this out, and they realized that they spray it with Roundup right before harvesting as well, which helps the drying process. And so now we have fertilizer being sprayed on it before harvest to increase the gluten, and we have the pesticide Roundup being sprayed to help it dry. No wonder why there's so many allergies to wheat. It's not wheat that's the problem. So if you get an heirloom wheat that's organic and grown locally without the pesticides and the fertilizers, chances are if your problem is not celiac but just a gluten sensitivity, you're not going to have a problem with it. So we really have to, you know, step back and look at our food system and what we do to our foods. That is the problem. You know, we have so many other problems with people's health, with allergies, autism, mental health conditions. We need to really start looking at the food. Yesterday I started coming down with a horrible cold, and I haven't been sick in so long, and you can probably hear it in my voice a little bit, but it was just so empowering because I knew what to do. You know, I came home, I took some Ensure tincture, which is, you know, a combination of echinacea and other immune support things. And I took some Wellmax, and I took, you know, I made some miso soup, and I drank some herbal tea, and I did acylococcinum, you know, which is a flu homeopathic remedy. And I just, like, put all this in, and I can't tell you how much better I feel today. Just overnight. I mean, we can take control of our health, and we have the power with food and with herbs and homeopathy to heal ourselves, and we really need to bring back some of these old remedies. Another story I'd love to share with you from yesterday's Food Tank Summit. There was a woman named Kavita Shukla. She's the founder and CEO of a new company called Fenugreen. And Fenugreen is handmade paper, like fresh paper, that she infuses with fenugreek and some other herbs to extend the shelf life of fresh produce. And it can extend the shelf life up to a month. It's amazing. And then the paper can be composted. So she is a first generation from India, first generation immigrant here in the United States. From her family's from India. And she was visiting her grandmother, and her grandmother had no refrigeration. She was looking at ways that she could help, you know, her grandmother and other local people who don't have refrigeration there. And it's just amazing. She was 12 years old, started experimenting in her garage, you know, went to Harvard, got a patent, and voila, she has this company that's in all of the Whole Foods, in Walmart, everywhere. And it's the first time I ever actually heard of it. So I'm really excited to learn more about that company and all the other innovations that are out there. We had someone talking about black soldier fly innovation, how that's working in third world countries. And, you know, it's the innovation that people are coming up with to attack some of these issues that we're all plagued with is really amazing. And the Food Tank Summit talking about food waste was really a wonderful, eye-opening event. And for those of you that do not know about Food Tank, it's a wonderful think tank all around food, and it brings people together, and it's just wonderful. So check them out online. And later today, right after my show, starting at 12 o'clock, if you're in New York at Washington Square Park, they are sponsoring a big dance event called Karjana. And this is being choreographed by Broadway dancers. There's going to be speakers there. Stephen Ritz, one of my favorite people from the Bronx Green Machine, will be there. You know, but it's going to be a three-hour event from noon to 3. It's going to be lots of dancing, talks, a huge event in the park. You don't want to miss it. If you can get away, take a long lunch break, and go down to Washington Square Park, it's the place you want to be. Also coming up this Saturday, there's the Hip Hop for Hunger that's taking place in the Bronx. I've been talking about this for weeks. It's finally here. And the Bronx is home to hip hop, fashion, food, and culture. And it's also has the largest number of food insecure homes than any other borough in the city. So this year, Eat New York City will be uniting all of these facets together to take a stand against hunger at the Andrew Freeman Mansion on Saturday from 4:30 to 8:30. And you can go to NYC, you know, the Bronx Food and Wine Festival to register for that. Also, this weekend, there's lots of things going on the island. Garden of Eve is having their garlic festival Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 6. Peconic Land Trust is having a harvest herb event at the Agricultural Center in Southold. There is the National Electric Drive Week event happening out in Riverhead at the Tanger Outlets. The Tanger Outlets are in Riverhead, and this will be an opportunity if you're at all considering getting an electric car. It will be an opportunity to see all the electric cars that are out on the market under one roof. So that should be a great place if you're in the market for an electric car or just curious about it. It should be a lot of fun. Also, September 17th, on Sunday, the Long Island Network for Change presents What You Need to Know About Long Island Water. And that's happening at Temple Beth El in Huntington. It's a free event. Sarah Malin, the director of the Center for Water Resource Management at NYIT, will be there talking along with Charlie Bevington of the Sierra Club, talking about Long Island water. So that should be really interesting. September 19th, Why Hunger, an organization that I love, along with Food First, are having a book tour for a new book that they have just come out with called Land Justice, Reimagining Land, Food, and the Commons in the United States. And this should be a wonderful opportunity to come out and meet the founder of Food First and Why Hunger and hear what they say about this book, raising awareness about food justice. September 21st, there is an event talking about how New York City is fighting food waste, and the Lower East Side Ecology Center was at the event yesterday for the Food Tank Summit. And it's going to be taking place at the Essex Street Market. And it's also co-presented by the New York City Compost Project. So you can come down and learn how you can compost and ways we can try to get to zero waste in the city. They'll also be talking about recycling bread or surplus bread to make fresh beer. Talking about the beer movement, Dan Barber was also talking about how a lot of the wheat fields out in Iowa that he was seeing are being transitioning to growing barley. And barley for craft beer is really a big thing. And barley is so good for the soil. It helps sequester the CO2 into the earth and takes it out of the atmosphere. And it's just really great for the land. So that was an exciting thing as well. The Association for Vertical Farming is having an event in Washington, D.C. from September 21st to the 23rd. The Long Island Beekeepers are having their big event this weekend. Next weekend, September 23rd. So you should go on to the Long Island Beekeepers website and find out more information about that. And there's also a Honeyfest Beekeepers annual boardwalk celebration also on September 23rd. Out in the Rockaways on the boardwalk. Also on September 23rd, there's an intro to aquaponics at Oco Farms. It's one of my favorite farms in Brooklyn. They're doing a lot to teach people about aquaponics and vertical growing, so check that out. There's so many things going on. I don't want to take the time to go into all of them. Of course, the New York City Wine Food Festival is coming up. October 12th through the 17th, you might want to get into that. 100% of those proceeds go to No Kid Hungry and the Food Bank of New York City. So check that out. And I want to share my recipe with you. So this recipe, last week I did the recipe, the squash vegetable lasagna, and I promised you all that as delicious as that was, it did have quite a bit of cheese in it. And for those of us trying to eat vegan, I wanted to do a vegan option. So this is the squash vegetable casserole, just a little bit changed up so that it is cheeseless, dairyless. Of course, it's also gluten-free, so this is a wonderful recipe for any of my vegan and gluten-free friends. I'm calling it a squash vegetable casserole instead of lasagna. There's a few different parts of it. I mean, first there's the things I'm making the layers out of, which is butternut squash, eggplant, and potatoes. And then there's the layers. One is with tomatoes and onion. Another one is with the cashew cream, which is like a bechamel sauce instead of the cheese. And then the other one is with the greens, the kale and the Swiss chard. So you're going to start with one butternut squash, de-seeded and sliced, one eggplant, two potatoes, and 2 tablespoons parsley, chopped parsley. Then for the cherry tomato filling, you're going to use 2 to 3 red onions, chopped, 2 cups of cherry tomatoes cut in half, 1 can of fire-roasted tomatoes. If you have another 2 cups, if you have 4 cups of cherry tomatoes, you can do that instead. But I didn't have that, so I used 1 can of fire-roasted tomatoes. 2 tablespoons of minced garlic, 1/2 teaspoon salt, 3 tablespoons of vegan pesto, and I have the recipe for that on my website, too. But you just make pesto and leave out the cheese, basically, and add a little nutritional yeast instead to compensate. And 1/4 cup of white wine, 1 tablespoon minced garlic. I'm sorry, 1/4 cup of white wine. That's for the onion filling. And then for the bechamel, it's 1 tablespoon minced garlic, 2 tablespoons vegan pesto, 2 tablespoons nutritional yeast, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, and 3 cups of cashews that you soaked for 3 hours. And then for the kale layer, you need 2 small onions. I diced it up. It was about 1 cup of diced onions. 1/2 cup of diced celery, which was about 2 stalks. 4 cups of blanched combination of kale, Swiss chard, if you had collards, anything. Greens, basically. 4 cups blanched, and then you measure it in a measuring cup after you squeeze out all the water. 2 small peppers chopped. 1 cup of walnuts that are toasted. 1/4 cup of salt. I'm sorry, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, forgive me. 2 tablespoons minced garlic and 1/4 cup of white wine. So you're going to start by sauteing the onion in olive oil with 2 tablespoons of minced garlic. And when the onions are translucent, add the cherry tomatoes, the fire-roasted tomatoes, and cook those down for about 3 minutes. Then add the salt and 1/4 cup of white wine. Cook it for about another 3 minutes until most of the wine has evaporated, and add the 3 tablespoons of pesto, and the and then cook that for about another minute. And then take that out of the cast iron frying pan that you were just sauteing it in and put it in a bowl and just let that sit on the side. And we're going to reuse that pan. Meanwhile, you can toast the walnuts for about 5 minutes in a 350 oven just till they get fragrant and chop those up. You're going to remove the stems from the kale because those are really tough. And then you're going to chop the kale and the Swiss chard and blanch it for about 5 minutes. And then remove it from the boiling water and put it right into an ice bath to cool it down, and then squeeze the water out. And then you're going to measure it. And like I said, you want about 4 cups of the blanched greens. You're going to drain the cashews, and then in a food processor or Vitamix, you're going to combine the cashews with 2 cups of water, nutritional yeast, pesto, garlic, and salt, and blend that until really fluffy and smooth. Then you're going to grease the bottom of a casserole pan, about 9 by 13. If you have one that's a little deeper, like I did, that's really great. The Pyrex ones tend to be a little shallow, so if you have something that's a little deeper than a Pyrex pan, that's good. And then you line the bottom of the casserole pan with the potatoes, and that will, you know, create like a crust. They get really toasted on the bottom there, and they're delicious. So you line the bottom of the pan with the potatoes. Then add 1/2 of the tomato mixture and spread that out. Add 1/2 of the kale mixture and spread that out. And then add 1/3 of the cashew cream and spread that out. Then you're going to add a layer of the eggplant slices over that cashew cream. Then you're going to add another layer of the kale mixture over the eggplant, and then 1/3 of the cashew cream. Then you're going to add the squash slices in an even layer over the cashew cream. And then you're going to cover that with the remaining tomato mixture and then top it off with the cashew cream on top. And bake it in an oven about 375 for 50 minutes, cover it with foil. Then after 50 minutes, remove it from the oven, take the foil off, and cook it for another 20 minutes or so until it gets a little golden brown. Basically, you know it's done if you stick a knife through it and it's all soft. You know, the squash takes a little while to cook, as does the eggplant. So you will find this recipe on my website as well as on the PRN website. After you remove it, before serving it, you can garnish it with the chopped parsley. And that's it. I know it sounds complicated. It's really quite simple, but there are quite a few steps. So it is not a midweek recipe. It's definitely a recipe that you want to do ahead of time. If you're having people over, it's great because you can make it ahead of time, put it in the casserole pan, and then just warm it up when your guests arrive. And it's really great. So now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you my guest, Jody Lindsay Papma. She believes in the power of food, as I was talking about earlier in the show. The power of food is amazing, and she completed a nutrition consultant training program at Bauman College, and after that she launched her startup called Smart Food Made Simple, which is a consultancy organization focused on teaching parents that food is so powerful. And her mantra is straightforward: simple changes and smart choices help our children's bodies and brains function optimally. And when children are encouraged to eat whole foods at an early age, it promotes lifelong positive food behaviors. And that's what Jody's really focusing on. And she's working directly with families, school districts, and community organizations to design affordable, healthy meal plans that children will love. She was a recent recipient of the Project Produce, which is a fruit and veggie grant program from the Chef Ann Foundation. Chef Ann was a guest on my show a few years back. Amazing what she's doing with school food. For those of you that had not heard, all of New York City will be serving free school lunch to over a million students starting this year in the public schools in New York City. So that's really exciting. So anyway, it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you Jody Lindsay Papma. Jody, are you with me?
I am. Thank you so much for having me today.
You're welcome. So thank you for joining me and for the work that you're doing. But I was hoping, I kind of shortened your bio. I thought maybe you could fill in a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you came to become a holistic nutritionist.
Okay, great. Well, I am. I do have two young boys. They are 9 and 11. And I became a holistic nutritionist after working for IBM for over 16 years, and it just was not very fulfilling. I always wanted to be a nutritionist, but I never realized how to go about that without having to sell a product. That I want people to eat whole foods. So I decided that Bowman, which is an amazing program, it's a holistic nutritional program. They also have a holistic nutritional chef program. They teach you about business and how to get people to, how to work, make food medicine. So I went into that program, and but before I went into that program, my son, who's 9 now, was born with a disease called Hirschsprung's disease. And that is a genetic disease of the colon, and he had to have a third of his colon removed when he was 5 days old.
Whoa.
So, yeah, so that's the reason why I went into this, because the surgeon at the time said he cannot eat your standard American diet. And I had read everything from Barbara Kingsolver, Animal Vegetable Miracle, and I was very into Mark Bittman and Michael Pollan. And so I was reading up on a lot of nutrition and said, okay, how do I do this? Well, it turns out this child that was not supposed to eat anything that was typical standard American, his favorite thing was macaroni and cheese and all the things that gum a child up. And during this time frame, I was listening to other parents dealing with the same problem. So that's why I decided that instead of, like some of the other nutritionists that I've worked with who work with cancer patients or hospice patients, I really wanted to focus on kids. And then when I started to get into it, I became really involved in my community. They had a healthy eating, active living policy that they were trying to push forward within our city. So I live in Boulder County, and the city I live in is Longmont. And healthy eating, active living helps to improve food insecurity, food access, and we're trying to work with, and this is not, I'm not yet working mm-hmm. with a school district. I'm trying to just get a feel of what's happening within my community related to food and how it's affecting kids.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started to work with them, and I became a trained Cooking Matters professional. So Cooking Matters is an organization that is through Share Our Strength. I'm not sure if you've heard of it before, but it really works with lower-income families and teaching them how to cook on a budget, shop on a budget, how to cook for their family, how to get kids involved, and they even have a program for child care professionals and how to teach kids.
Isn't that with Mario Batali?
No, sure. this is a yes, it is his organization. He is one of the spokespeople for it, for sure.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, I've heard of it.
So
the food bank that I work with also has that program.
Yeah, it's an amazing program, and it's very empowering to these parents that come in, and you know, English may be their second language, and they are first generation Americans, and they want to break through the mold that they typically follow within their family. And one story is one mother, she didn't know what a tablespoon was. And so it's that kind of elementary training that they're too afraid to ask, but this is the type of course and class. It's usually a 6-week program. It helps make them more courageous. And mm-hmm. and it empowers them. And even 1 week, we go to the grocery store and we walk through the fruits and the veggie aisle, and we have them bring us a produce that you don't know what that is. And so they bring maybe an artichoke or a jicama or something like that, and we bring them through the meat aisle and we explain to them, you know, how to buy on a budget. So I feel like that was a really amazing program to get into right out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I've always been interested in school food, and I work within the school district called St. Vrain Valley School District, which happens to be a sister school district to where Chef Ann works.
Oh,
and
really?
Chef Ann is in Boulder Valley, and she's not called the Renegade Lunch Lady for a reason. Well, she's called the Renegade Lunch Lady for a reason, pardon me, because she does things like she has meetings in January with local farmers and says, this is what I'd like to put on my menu next year. How many acres can you give to us for peppers or for tomatoes? And when do you think we could have them on our menu? And she takes them to lunch, and she really learns from them. And there's that collaboration that is very innovative.
Yeah.
Our school district's not
I've been
quite
hearing
the
more
same.
And more about that. That's what you need to do, because otherwise the farmers can't take a risk and grow. I mean, you're talking about like in New York City, there's over 1 million school kids. So you want apples, fresh apples, you need a lot of apples. And
you need a lot of, yeah.
Right. So, you know, the farmer just can't take that kind of risk. So if you contract with them ahead of time and give mm-hmm. them some money up front, you know, it's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, and that nutrient-dense food that those local farmers grow feeds a child, as opposed to some processed food like Uncrustables or Craisins or something that comes in a package that they just dump out and heat up. That type of food does not have nutrients in it. And then, you know, oftentimes, and I'm a big advocate of recess before lunch, but across our country we have a lot of recess after lunch. And mm-hmm. students burn those calories very, very quickly. But recess before lunch allows a child to get hungry. And then when they go in and they eat nutrient-dense food, they're ready to learn at 1 o'clock when they go back into class. They don't have that afternoon slump that even adults, we can all relate to the afternoon slump. But when you're 10 and you have that afternoon slump, and then you have to actually write a paper or do some math or, you know, really focus, it's real challenging. And many of our lunches in our country are full of processed, high sugar, high fat, hydrogenated oil. So that doesn't feed the brain and it doesn't feed the gut.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. I've seen a lot of schools where they have to have, they share the lunch period. Half goes to recess first and eats lunch. The other half eats lunch. And then they switch. And that's part of the problem, that they don't have enough time for lunch. They're given 20 minutes to eat lunch.
Yes.
And then they have to go out to recess to make room for the next group coming in.
And that's something that I've been, Alice Waters is one of my, she's just a hero. And, she, you know, she started the Edible School Garden. She's from San Francisco. But her new policy, or what she really wants to bring forward and educate people, is school lunch should be an academic subject. It shouldn't be a feed train of people going, kids going in, eating and going. Lunch should be, and you were at Slow Food, and so you were able to experience that lunch that she created for everyone. Were you there?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Uh-huh. So, and to give your listeners an understanding, what she did was she fed 500 people in 5 minutes, just the actual process. And then we all sat down and had this beautiful lunch. So we had a table of 8 people, and and it was a family style meal. And I know this is maybe a pie in the sky kind of view, but boy, it would be so great if some schools could at least institute this. We had one person go get a fresh tamale and bowl of tamales. One person went to get the salad. One person went to get the beans, and another person went to get the fruit.
Salad.
And they would all lined up on the table. And we shared
the meal.
And
while those people were getting that, someone else was setting the table.
Right, and other kids were setting the table. So that, it teaches responsibility. It teaches community. It taught kids. Or taught us, but we were the kids on that day, where our food came from, because she sourced everything local. She had
also portion control and sharing, because you knew each bowl had to feed 8 people, so you couldn't take more than your share, because otherwise your friend wouldn't have any.
Exactly. And you know what? Everybody was full.
Right.
So it was all very nutrient dense food, and that's really, and it about the soil. I mean, I could go into the soil forever, but you know, where your food grows in that soil helps to feed your that food, which also helps to feed that awesome microbiome that helps to keep us healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But food, the lunch is the academic subject. Not only teaches, you know, community and sharing, but it teaches math. So if we did something like that, we could talk about, you know, seeds per acre for math, or cost to the market once something you are at harvest. You could talk about science and germination to harvest, and, you know, pest control without using pesticides, and how the environment impacts specific crops, and crop rotation. And that's all science. And then social issues as well, and food inequity and security. And then, of course, food is art. So lunch really could be an academic subject and not just an obligation that school districts feel like they've got to get it done as quickly as possible so kids can get back to class. That
right.
doesn't do anybody
right.
a good service.
Right. Jody, let's take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I really would like to focus in on your company, Smart Food Made
okay.
Simple, and what you're doing
sure.
with that. So everyone listening,
okay,
don't
great.
Go anywhere. I'm talking with Jody Lindsay Popma from Colorado with Smart Food Made Simple. And, of course, I'm Bhavani at IE Green. Be right back.
Stay tuned to PRN.FM for more empowering ideas from Progressive Voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Truth to Power is a weekly program every Friday at 4 p.m. on Progressive Radio Network. I'm Charles Ortlieb, and I was the publisher of New York Native, the first newspaper to cover the AIDS and chronic fatigue syndrome epidemics. Each week, I'll open up Pandora's box of controversial questions about what AIDS really is and what causes it. I've been covering this wild and crazy story for 36 years. I've known all the players involved with this unresolved issue. Join me each Friday at 4 as we turn the AIDS and chronic fatigue syndrome epidemics upside down.
Someone has to cross the River Jordan. Someone has to find a way to save the day. Let this be the hour to speak truth to power.
Hello, this is Dane Wigington, host for the weekly Global Alert News Hour from GeoengineeringWatch.org. I'm grateful and honored to now be a part of the PRN Radio Network lineup. Every Saturday at 2 p.m. on the Global Alert News Hour, I'll cover the most dire frontline issues and stories which pose the greatest and most immediate threat to us all and to the biosphere on which we depend to support the web of life. I'll stitch these stories together to form a coherent picture of what's unfolding and why, and what each of us can do to help alter the human race's current course of genocide and ecocide. Join me on the show every Saturday at 2 p.m. for a crystal clear look at the ominous horizon that lies before us.
Progressive Radio Network, the number one network for those who care about the truth.
And welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Jody Lindsay Popma, and we're talking about her new company called Smart Food Made Simple. Jody, you with me?
I sure am.
Great. So tell me what you are doing with your company and how you're working with families and communities to create better food.
Okay, sure. Well, primarily, I work with Smart Food Made Simple, works with communities currently. I do have some clients here and there, and primarily it's for families and parents come to me because they may have a child that is really a picky eater, and how do they change that dynamic? Or they may have a child that's on the verge or on the spectrum for ADHD or autism, and they don't want to medicate their child, and they're trying to figure out, well, what do I do? How can I do? What changes can I make in my home so that child can focus better, or that child has the opportunity to control themselves better? So I work with families, and we create. We go through and we do a diet log. I do 3 days. And then I create a menu plan for them, and I work with that child. And that it can be a challenge working with families only because you're not just working with that child. You are working with the child and the mother and the father and whoever's doing the grocery shopping and the cooking and the preparing, et cetera. So we have had a lot of success. If there's a lot of buy-in, if you have one parent that may not be as focused on it, then it can be a significant challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With a child with ADHD, what do you recommend? What foods do you recommend avoiding?
Oh, I would definitely recommend avoiding gluten. And, you know, any processed food, anything that's processed. So staying away from high sugar, dairy. And anything processed with gluten for sure. Because what you really want to do is focus on that microbiome. So that child should be taking a probiotic. You should try and introduce things like sauerkraut and put those on an all-natural hot dog without a bun or a gluten-free bun. It gives it a really yummy flavor. And they also need to do flaxseed. And flaxseed is a very volatile it's a volatile seed, so it should be kept in the freezer. When you use flaxseed, cooking it in the oven in a bread, it does diminish the nutrient properties because it is so fragile. Flaxseed oil is something that's really great in the morning, and that should also be kept in the refrigerator because it is so sensitive. Mm-hmm. And then there is a fish oil, and I'm going to my refrigerator right now because it is amazing. And it is by the company called Barlean's, and they have these omega swirl fish oils that come in mango and lime, and one tastes like key lime pie and lemon. And they're very palatable to kids, super sweet, but it's something that can get that extra omega-3 into their brain. So I highly recommend those things.
What's the company again?
Barlean's, Barlean's. It's something that's usually in a natural grocery store in the refrigerated section, and they only need like a teaspoon to 2 teaspoons a day, depending on, you know, the severity of the situation.
Uh-huh. And, of course, they're naturally flavored. It's not anything
artificial.
Oh, yes,
they are.
Uh-huh. Wow. Okay. And if somebody is vegetarian, not eating fish, is there a substitute
then
for that?
I would do flaxseed.
Flaxseed oil.
For sure. Flaxseed oil and flaxseeds have the highest amount of omega-3. But things like adding avocado into their diet. If someone is a vegetarian but still eats eggs in the morning, a great breakfast that I give to my son is avocado, eggs, and a little bit of homemade salsa. And It is absolutely delicious. And it gives it satiates him throughout the morning. His brain is on fire and he's ready to go and ready for school. And he doesn't have those mid-morning cravings like at 9 o'clock needing something right then.
Uh-huh. Great.
And so the other thing that I'm doing with Smart Food Made Simple is I work with Boulder County Public Health, and we're working on an educational series on teaching parents about the dangers of sugar. So we're doing things like sugar demonstrations at the farmer's market. You know, I'm sure many of your listeners, since they're listening to your show, they're bright people, so they've seen those demonstrations that show, you know, Mountain Dew, and then they show how much sugar is in a Mountain Dew.
Sure.
So I take that on the road to the farmer's market. I work at the farmer's market once a month, and I do it's like a bridging farm to consumer. So I do a tasting, and I showcase a specific farm. I highlight, I create a very simple recipe. The reason I am Smart Food Made Simple is I want my recipe to be very simple for parents to follow. I don't want to use these complicated 20-step recipes where they have to chill something, then cook something. I want them to get in and out of the kitchen as quickly as possible so they can put whatever they're making.
Yeah, that's how most of my recipes are. The recipe I shared today is definitely not the norm. And, you know, it's definitely a weekend recipe, but it's something you can make ahead of time, which is kind of nice. But I agree with you. I mean, most meals have to be done in, you know, 20 minutes or less, you know?
Exactly. And I made this amazing recipe on Saturday. I showcased a local orchard, Ela Family Farms, and their apples. Well, apples is an easy sale. I've also done beets and kale and summer squash and turnips, and I try to do everything. Apple was the easiest one I've ever done. And it was just apples and Italian sweet peppers and red onion, and then the dressing was apple cider vinegar, honey, and a little bit of sesame seeds. And it was amazing, and people were just flipping out because of that. It was a really kid-friendly recipe, and parents said, I'm going to make this for my kid's lunch, and, like, do it, and it will last a little while in your fridge, too. So I try to do that through Boulder County Farmers Market, so I have a contract with them as well. And then I also have something that I started because of that grant. You spoke about the grant earlier. The grant was called Project Produce, and we have a greenhouse at our school, which is very unusual, but the greenhouse is a real amazing teaching tool. However, when preschoolers and kindergartners go plant the tomatoes, and then the other grades tend to the tomatoes, and let's say the fourth and fifth graders harvest the tomatoes, there's not enough tomatoes to go around. So Project Produce allowed us to create a program called Harvest Days. And Harvest Days, you work with a school district, and it's an innovative way to bring those local farms into the schools through tasting events during the lunch period. So the tasting event I spoke about at the farmer's market, it's very similar in a school environment as well. And it supports our local agriculture. It teaches, and we bring the farmers into the school, and the kids have a great time because they get to taste tomatoes or those turnips or beet day. You know, they get to have that opportunity. So we have a contract or a grant through Boulder County Farmers Market, and that's one of the primary things that I'm doing now and the school, because the school year just started. So we started in 2015 with four events at one school. Last year we did six events at two schools, and this year we're doing six schools and 13 events. So It's really creating an amazing traction. And yesterday we had our first one of the school year at a school that is very high free reduced lunch. So it's like 90% free reduced lunch. Mm-hmm. And I had kids tell me they had never tried a tomato before. And it also gives you a view into what a child brings for lunch. I had one table that had the fire Cheetos. I don't even know what they're called, but they're very bright red. Mm-hmm. And it was a group of kindergartners. And I said, hey, guys, want some tomatoes? And they ate tomatoes. So it allowed me, it made me feel good that at least they were eating something that was whole food while mm-hmm. they were eating something that was highly, highly processed.
Right. Well, also what's so nice is you're having them taste it when it's at its prime harvest time. So If you taste a tomato that you bought at a supermarket in the middle of the winter, it's going to be a very different experience for a child than if you're tasting it when it's ripe from the garden and it's so high in its sugar content. And it's, you know, that when a tomato is ripe from the garden, you understand why it's really a fruit. You know, when you taste a tomato in the middle of the winter, you think it's a vegetable because, you know, anyway.
Really, I don't know what it is in the winter, actually.
It's not worth eating.
I know,
that's
I pull
what
it
I know.
Off of whatever I get. But they all bring all different colors. So there were yellow and orange and black and red. And it allowed kids to see what colors came in the tomatoes. And then we opened up the salad bar, so it was free to all the kids. And we had an assistant at the salad bar. Actually, our nutrition services director was helping every child at the salad bar get their own free salad for the day. So it was really, it's an amazing program that encourages kids to eat healthy. And then our incentive is they get a sticker if they try it. And a sticker goes a long way with kids.
This is so funny. Uh-huh.
So that was that program. And we used a local farm called Olin Farms. And they're in their 10th year here in Boulder County. And they actually supply a lot of their produce to Boulder Valley School District. But they don't supply any of their produce to our school district. So this is a way that rather than having our nutrition services director contract with a specific farm, I'm contracting with that farm, Smart Food Made Simple. And we are, and actually we have the organization called St. Vrain Healthy Kids. We're contracting and we're doing the relationship building with the farm and the school district, and then ultimately with the students. And then we create these amazing little bookmarks that we give at kids' Friday folders, because all kids bring home stuff from school. And
right.
The bookmarks have the story on the farm on one side. And on the other side is the recipe that was served that day. Is we serve a fresh version and a prepared version. So yesterday, our prepared version was an oven-roasted tomato on a whole wheat cracker, and it tasted like a pizza, but so much better. And then some nutritional fun facts about a tomato.
Very cool. Now, are you having any success in improving the daily school food?
I hesitate. I am, as far as awareness goes. Through our little we have an organization called St. Vrain Healthy Kids, and there's awareness within the community about the school food, and building a positive relationship with our nutrition services director, and stating things like orange juice and apple juice is not the same thing as an orange and an apple. Last year, through that organization, St. Vrain Healthy Kids, we successfully had the school district stop selling juice from kindergarten through third grade.
Good. Uh-huh.
But as far as some of the other changes, I think they're going to be slow going. And I think the harvest days and the awareness with improving, getting more local food in the school and having more parents voice their concerns, I think that's going to really help and propel some change.
Uh-huh. So you haven't seen much of the improvements that are going on in Boulder School District with Chef Ann being kind of taken up from your school district. You know, I would think, having a school district right next to you that's so much better, that there's a little bit of that competition in there that they would want to have their school lunch be just as good. There's none of that going on, huh?
It doesn't appear to be the case. And I think that just because we are a very large school district, and I don't know, I don't work in the school district. I'm just a contractor.
Uh-huh. And is the school lunch a food service contractor, or do you have individual chefs in the schools?
Oh, food service contractors. Yeah. We do not have individual chefs. And there are certain schools that are just warming kitchens. So, like today, we have something called Crispitos for lunch. And I don't know, it's just some of it is highly processed. She did take the hydrogenated oils out. However, the second option for lunch is still an Uncrustable, which does have hydrogenated oil in it. So
what's an Uncrustable?
Well, it's a Smucker's product. I giggle because our town is actually getting an Uncrustables plant, which it almost feels like it's going to be a battle that is not worth fighting. Like a $640 million Uncrustable plant from Smucker's is going to be built here. So Uncrustables are processed peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. So, and they buy them in the freezer section. So they come in cellophane, and it's a stamped peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Really?
Peanut butter
and jelly, and they take the crust off?
Yes. Well, it's still in bread, but they call it Uncrustables because I guess there is no crust, but it's like almost a scallop edge.
Right. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of our school districts are not even allowing peanut butter. You know, they've gone peanut free. You don't have that going on out there?
We have a lot of peanut free in the classroom. Most, like the school where my children go, there is, it's peanut free in the classroom, peanut free, seed free. However, they're allowed to have peanuts in the lunchroom, and there are peanut free tables.
Uh-huh. Right. Right. I love those. I worked at the Waldorf School for many years, and, you know, we were talking to parents in the nursery school about sending in healthy snacks. And I guess I'm already going, my kids are much older, so I'm going back many years. But when they started coming in with yogurt with, like, sprinkles in it and all this crap to put into the yogurt, it was like, I couldn't believe it. And then the Lunchables, those things with the pepperoni that you put on top of a little crust that looks like a pizza.
Yep.
Just people, are they still eating those?
Oh, yes. I saw a lot of those yesterday at that the free reduced lunch school. And there were kids asking me to put tomatoes in their lunch uncrustable trays. And Uncrustables, I think they are the absolute worst because they're so high in sodium. They're so highly processed. There's so much waste with them. There's so much sugar. And they're expensive. And parents may think that, oh, it's so easy. And I've been at the store, and I have a phrase that I say, I don't like to shit all over everybody when it comes to what they should or should not eat.
Uh-huh.
But when
right.
it comes to Uncrustables, I do notice in the grocery store, and I do see parents with 25 Uncrustables in their lunch in their cart. And it's so expensive to shop like that. And there's no nutrition in it. And the kids that eat that, I can't imagine, you know, how they struggle day after day because they have no, that depletes their microbiome. So they don't have that good bacteria that feeds their brain and vice versa. They don't have that, flow going in their system. So I'm a big,
yeah, I know
I
it's really,
really
hard.
Don't like
it's
them.
Hard sometimes when you see that and to not say anything because it's not really your place, but
oh yeah,
it's very hard.
But
almost out of time, Jody. So can you just share with my listeners a little bit you know, some of your contact info if they want to look you up online, your website, that kind of thing.
I would love that, yes. Well, you can find me, of course, on Facebook and Instagram at Smart Food Made Simple. And then I do have a website, smartfoodmadesimple.com. I am in Boulder County, and I would love to talk with anyone. I do have a lot of I try to do some organization with slow food and getting more education around school food and food for children. So please reach out to smartfoodmadesimple.com.
Thank you. Jody, thanks so much for joining me. It's been really a pleasure to have this conversation with you. Good luck with everything, and maybe I'll see you at the next slow food event.
And oh, you will.
Everybody listening out there, thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now.